8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
And live from our national studios here in Accra, networking with all our regional FM stations and around the world on www.gbcghana.com, we welcome you once again to Behind the News, our program that delves much deeper into the news happening around us and speak to the experts and the newsmakers. My name is Kingsley Obinchere. For tonight, the recently maligned computerized school selection and placement system, CSSPS, is the Ministry of Education making moves for amendments. The tussle over the supposed payment of 42 million Ghana cedis to an NDC store. What are the legalities surrounding the whole case? We'll try to speak to some lawyers on this. The Get Fund Board warns contractors working on the funds projects in the Upper West region to up their game or face severe penalties. And then when you hear about tax, who do you think should be paying it? Do you think it's being reused for the right purposes? And what should be your attitude? All these to be explored in the course of the program. Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana and linking up with all our regional FM stations. If you are somewhere in Accra and its environs, you are live on Unique 95.7 and also on Ubuntu 96.5. We move on to our first story here, but before then, we want to encourage you, as usual, to send in your text and comment to 026-441-8767. 026-441-8767. Well, ask many parents who sought admission for their wards to the senior high school this academic year, and most of them will tell you the frustrations they went through. This year's computerized school selection and placement system, CSSPS, was characterized by several challenges which parents and the students themselves would not like to experience again. In a bid to address these challenges and holistically review the computerized school selection and placement system, the Ministry of Education has set up a committee. The committee is made up of officials of the Ghana Education Service, Conference of Heads of Assisted Secondary Schools, CHAS, and other stakeholders. It is headed by the Acting Deputy Director General of GES and Director of Basic Education, Stephen Edu. He has joined us on the line as we explore how this committee can make things work much better. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Yes, welcome to Behind the News once again.
Thank you very much.
Certainly, many parents will be welcoming this, especially those who have their wards in the final year of junior high school. Can you tell us the terms of reference for the committee?
No, thank you very much. The term of reference for this committee is to, first of all, to look at the challenges that we face as far as this year's placement is concerned. And we are to look at some of the issues that cropped out. Some of them are, first of all, the 30% placement from the catchment area, which created a number of problems. We are also to look at the number of choices that students are to take. Right now, they have to take 1 to 5 choices. We'll be looking at that. And we are also to look at those special areas like those who are already in the, those who are supporting the schools in a way, the board of governors, the heads, the teachers, and whatever. We will also be looking at other issues that confronted in terms of the choices in terms of day and boarding, because you realize that for the day and boarding, somebody may choose a school hoping that he's going to get a day boarding, but unfortunately he may not get boarding, and then he's made day creates a number of problems. And we also be looking at issues concerning the programs, because right now people have to decide on the program they want to do when they go to the senior high school. So these are the major areas that we'll be looking at as our terms of reference.
When are you starting work?
We've already started. We had the first meeting last time, and what we are going to do now, we have asked the individuals and then the CHAS as a body also to look at some of the issues that came up. We've also asked the secretary, the coordinator for the scholar, the CSSPS, also to come up with some of the issues that he's come up with. And so we are now collating ideas, views, and others from other stakeholders. And our next meeting is coming on the 4th of January 2012.
How long do you have to wait, considering the fact that as time goes, people are preparing to once again trust, if I have to use that word, the computer?
We have been asked to submit our report by the middle of January 2012.
You stated this, but we didn't hear about the fact that sometimes the keen interest of parents will help avert some of the challenges that came up. How do you hope to address that?
Now, as part of the program, we are going to look at some of the issues, and we will be inviting some of the parents for the program. Those who parents who at least was had some problems as far as the placement was concerned. So the committee will also be calling on some of the parents and then to find out some of the challenges that they faced as far as the placement is concerned.
You've mentioned those who will be involved, but you didn't tell us where they are coming from, their background, to know how diverse it will be so that they will make input that comes from various strata of the society.
Now, basically, we have CHAS, the Ghana Education Service as a body, and then we also be calling on COPS, that is the heads of the basic schools. These are the key stakeholders, but as part of our work, we'll be calling on some parents. We have some PT associations across the country. We'll be inviting some of them. We will also be calling on some of the people from the District of Education Office, Regional Education Offices, and then some other stakeholders, teachers, and even some other individuals within the system. We are going to look at all of them. But maybe as we start to meet, and then we find out some of the people that we need to talk to, we invite all of them.
Yeah, it's early days yet, but you've mentioned the issue of the 30%, and some are even advocating that it is taken off altogether. Is that one of the things you are considering to start with?
Yes, in fact, that is one of the major issues that we are going to look at. That is the 30% from the catchment area. You know, as part of the placement, some of the problems that we encountered was the fact that, you know, we gave some forms out for the parents or the in collaboration with the people to fill. But unfortunately, we did not receive some of these forms early enough for us to factor that into the system. So that created a number of problems. And also the criteria for the catchment area was also appeared not to be very, very clear, because there are issues about some people thought that once they come from a particular area, even if the children are not schooling there, they thought that they are also to be considered. So we'll be looking at the criteria for the selection of those people within the 30%, that is the catchment area placement.
You've mentioned that you'll be consulting some parents. Is it open enough for others who might not be consulted directly to also make an input?
Yes. So what we intend doing is to open up something like maybe from the district and the regional offices, and that those parents who have some concerns and they want to raise it could be given the opportunity. So when we meet at our next meeting, we are going to decide on how we can get some of these parents to also contribute to the whole issue about the review.
Already, we have
a technical committee, and the technical committee will be consulted.
Okay. There's been some allegations against those handling the system, and you promised the last time we spoke on CSSPS that these are going to be investigated. Have you done anything about them so far?
Yes. You see, the unfortunate thing is that we don't really have records, very detailed records, at least to look into some of these cases, because most of them, as I may say, are allegations. People are not really coming up with some of the issues for us to determine what the challenges are. But if people come up and then they have issues that they raise, we can look into all those cases. But for now, we haven't got any case that has been substantiated that we can use it as a case to investigate. But there are also other investigations going on some of these allegations.
Okay. How soon do you hope to get results on those ones?
You know, sometimes the difficulty is if you don't have enough information, it becomes very difficult for us to do the investigation. People are not coming up to say this or to say that. There are allegations of malpractices, people changing, money changing hands and all that. But as of now, nobody has really come out to say that somebody collected money from him or her for us to be able to do that investigation. So maybe right now, as a committee has been set up, if you have cases like this and then you bring it up, you investigate, and then where we need to look at, we will look at.
Sometimes, you know, people won't like to come forward, and it's been part of the issues we talk about when talking about corruption allegations. How do they do it without necessarily exposing themselves?
You know, some of the cases, if the police is there also to assist us in some of these allegations, because they are the experts to go into some of these things. So if maybe for security reasons and other things, you could report to the police for investigation to be carried out.
Yeah. Well, please like to hold you, Mr. Stephen Edu, on the line for a moment. As we go to the other line, we have joining us Mr. Samuel Ofori-Eje, the president of the Conference of Heads of Assisted Secondary Schools, CHASS. They are major stakeholders in this. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
There's an issue that really touches on how hot you get during admission periods. How are you going to work with the committee?
Well, it will interest you to know that when the committee was set up, we have members of our association forming the majority. So it tells you how serious we are with the formation of this association. Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, we were at the third meeting when the Honorable Minister of Education, the Chief Director, and Mr. Edu on the other line, and then our Acting Director of Secondary Education, they were all there.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the full complement of my regional executive, that is CHASS regional executive. We looked into the issues, and for that matter, it became necessary for the formation of this committee. And so I think it's dear to our hearts, because you would agree with us that the students from the JHS, they are raw materials. So it is important. We are also very much involved in how we get these students into our school.
Yes. You are on record to have stated that the CSSPS works much better for you than going to select students as you used to do. But for this year, it presented a very unique challenge. What were some of the problems you faced that were quite different from previous years?
You know, unfortunately, it's difficult to say that we rather faced the challenges, because we had virtually nothing to do with the selection process. It was the CSSPS which was to do that and then bring the students to us. So at our end, the only problem we can talk about now, which is very serious indeed anyway, is that we got the students at the wrong time, so to speak. Because if, as I speak with you, some schools haven't gotten even 10% of their enrollment, then it can tell you that we have a long way to go to be able to prepare these students adequately. We need to burn extra calories. If we are doing 9 periods, we may have to go to 10 periods. If the students have to go on vacation, we have to keep them. I mean, it's really worrisome. That is the only side which is a bit of a problem to us. But let me just quickly add, some of us have straddled the two systems. That is the manual selection. I was ahead at the time we had the manual selections, at least for 3 times before the introduction of this system. That is why we believe that the system in itself has no problem. The system in itself, the CSSPS, if we go by the dictates of the system, I think it's the best that we can have for this country. So we still believe that it is the best. So what we need to do, or probably for better expression, is the better option than using the manual selection. So what we need to do is that this committee will have to look at the nitty-gritty and come out with lasting solutions. And I hope, since it is human beings who will be manning these institutions, when we come out with the solutions, we should let it work, and not the system which is defective. But the human beings who manage the system must make it work.
Yeah. So for the schools, you just mentioned that 10%, for some of the schools, they've not been able to have enrollment to the level of 10%. Have they declared vacancies for even parents to know that this is the situation? If we need places, this is where we need to go.
Yes. Ours was to declare the vacancies back to the CSSDS. That is the process.
Mm-hmm.
You see, if after a certain date and you haven't gotten your full complement of students, yours was to declare the vacancies to the CSSDS. And most of our, almost all of our members who have those vacancies have done that. But I think at the said meeting, certain decisions have been taken, and I'm sure I didn't listen to the discussions with Mr. Du from the beginning, but we've taken certain far-reaching decisions to make sure that those schools will quickly have some students in their schools by probably the second week of next term.
Mr. Ofereje, the issue is mentioned that sometimes it is not just a problem of the CSSPS, but the fact that students are not guided, whether it's from the teachers or perhaps the parents not showing that much concern. So they end up choosing a few schools, so many of them. And if it's in economics, you know, we are talking about inflation in that particular area. What do you do to let them know that there are some other schools as good as those they want to get into, so that they stop choosing the same schools where everybody wants to go?
My brother, ideally, this should be the work of our colleagues at the basic schools. That is the heads, the circuit supervisors, the district directors, and then the examination officers in the various district offices. But it is not working to perfection. The minister, honorable minister, mentioned that we, the heads in senior high schools, must equally show interest in the activities in the basic schools. Because at the end of it all, if the process does not go well, we, those who are receiving the students, will also suffer one way or the other. So we've also taken up that challenge. And as you rightly said, we've been part of, I worked with the technical working committee for a while until I became president and another person took over from me. So we are looking at the various scenarios. What can we do? For instance, in my school's catchment area, can I get to those schools, come somewhere February, March, and then give some direction to our colleagues down there? If it's possible, I should be able to put all the JHS 3 students together if their parents can come, because some of the problems also come from the parents. They insist that the students should choose a particular school, oblivious of the fact that, one, the child may not be up to that standard, and secondly, if too many students choose the particular school, if, for instance, I can only pick 500 as a result of the available space, and you have over 4,000 students applying to that school, look at the other 3,500. And invariably, most students and parents even forget the second and third choices that they've picked. They always want to go to the first choice, either that one or nothing. And that is what is also contributing to the problems that we are grappling with now.
Well, certainly you've raised some concerns, and the education authorities working with the basic level authorities will be acting on them. But we want to thank you very much for your time this evening, Mr. Ofereje. That's the president of the Conference of Heads of Assisted Secondary Schools. It's still behind the news, but we still have on the line the acting Director General of the Ghana Education Service and Director of Basic Education, Mr. Stephen Edu. Mr. Edu, you've heard the other concerns as raised. Some have declared vacancies. What has been done so far? Are there students still looking for schools and not getting, even though we have vacancies?
Yeah, like I told you from the beginning, you know, one of the issues that we are now struggling with is the day and then the boarding facility. If you take Accra schools, for instance, we have most of the schools having very fewer places for boarding. And so if you choose Accra school, for instance, then the likelihood that you have to be a day student is very, very high. So the problem is that some people have been sent into places where there are no boarding facilities and they have to be made day students. And parents maybe cannot do that because there are no hostel systems. So that is one of the issues that we are trying to work with, because like we met the other time, one of the issues that came up maybe if we declare the vacancies in the schools, because in previous years, what we have been doing is that a school will declare vacancy, but we don't declare vacancy for the number of day students and then the number of boarders. So at the end of the day, we send large number of students to this school where there will be no boarding facility to take most of the children. So this is one of the issues that we are going to look at to see how we can place people there. And then secondly, we also have the problem of people choosing programs. So you realize that in a particular school, you may have a large number of people who may choose arts as their program. And you realize that in other programs like agric or even sometimes even science, you may not even get many people choosing that particular program. So it creates a problem. So as a committee, we are also going to look at how we can fashion things out to ensure that at least the numbers that are sent to the schools are not maybe over bloated in a particular program or over bloated in terms of boarding or day. So these are some of the issues that we are going to look at. And I think maybe the committee has a lot to do to look at some of these issues so that we can avoid some of the situations that we could completely avoid.
We'll be monitoring your work every step of the way so that we update the listener on what you are doing. Perhaps they can also make inputs that will work so well for the interest of the students. Thank you so much, Mr. Edu.
So much. You're welcome.
Mr. Stephen Edu is Director of Basic Education and Acting Director General of the Ghana Education Service. It's Behind the News. The National Coordinator of the Ghana National Education Campaign Coalition, Leslie Tete, is on the line to look at the initiative of the Ministry of Education and what can be done to even make this committee really find an antidote to the challenges that has been faced in the course of the year. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Kingsley, and good evening to your listeners.
How do you see this committee working to address the concerns expressed?
Yeah, I think that it's a very noble idea in that the issue of poor performance at BEC and the issues of placement has been with us for some time now, and so it's in place for measures to be taken to address the situation. However, I would say that I think I remember I saw that publication a couple of weeks ago where they outlined what they were going to do. But I think the measures they are taking can go a bit beyond what they are doing now, because most of them, in my opinion, has to do with interim measures to try to arrest the situation, but I think there are deep root causes which can also be addressed through a comprehensive program.
Deep root causes, comprehensive programs. Can you share them with us?
Well, first of all, poor performance at BECE does not just start at that level. It has links with the way children are taught from the early stages. As a country, we have made it a policy to expand basic education to 11 years, and we have preschool for 2 years. Now, all public schools are supposed to have preschool units now. But there are a lot of challenges with early childhood development in Ghana at the moment. Infrastructure is a key issue at that level. Availability of people who are trained for this specialized area is also a challenge. And I'm sure that if we can come up with some long-term programs to solve some of these problems from the beginning, we can expect that the children will pick up by the time they get to the BECE level. Secondly, I also think that the NALA program, where they are using local languages to teach in the primary school level, is a good initiative, and we must take some steps to ensure that it is being effectively implemented. So what I think is that these are some measures that should be looked at. Then thirdly, the issue of those who go through the BECE and don't get placements in senior high schools should also be looked at. The policy or the program is that we should be able to place them in other areas of training. But the opportunities, as we speak now, are very limited, and we'll need a little more coordination to ensure that these places are available for those who may not wish to continue in senior high school. So these are some of the things I think that we can look at to ensure that we are addressing some of these challenges more comprehensively and in the long term.
Yes, certainly if we have to trace the history of the then junior secondary school, it was put in place to ensure that not everybody is heading towards the white-collar training. But it appears everybody now is going into that same system that was tried some time ago and not working for us. What then do you think can be done to help people appreciate that we have blue collar, especially with oil there, and there are other technical areas that they can veer into without necessarily choking the former system that seems to be creating problems?
Yeah, Kingsley, it's important that as much as we want to sensitize the public, it's also important that those who are responsible for policy making and implementation also give people direction. So I think that it's a two-pronged approach. We must educate people and show them what the opportunities are. But there's also the need to structure the system such that just as we have a formal system through the computer selection system where people are placed in senior high schools, we should also have a system that would ensure that people are placed in vocational training, other skill development, other technical areas. And though it's a lot of work, I think the earlier we focus on addressing that aspect, the better it is. Otherwise, we will continue to have this same challenge of mad rush of people trying to get into senior high schools that we know of.
You belong to an education campaign coalition.
Yes.
And naturally, for civil society organizations, taking some of these measures will help the people you are serving. What have you tried to let people know that there are opportunities they are not looking at?
Well, basically, as a coalition, our focus is more on addressing issues at the policy level. Notwithstanding, we do have some programs through our members who do sensitization at the community level. They encourage them to be able to explore what the opportunities are. But basically, most of our efforts are working together with government, people like Mr. Edu, to see how we can complement the processes to ensure that some of these systems are properly structured to facilitate smooth implementation.
But from your interaction with people at that level, do you have a sense of feeling that some would like to go into the area if given the chance?
Yes, there are a large number of out-of-school children. Many of these out-of-school children are also children who have ever been to school and have dropped out for various reasons. Some of them have dropped out at the BEC level, others at C6 for various reasons. And they see the need to be able to get some skill. So those opportunities are there, and people are there who are willing to take such opportunities. But when you ask them, they tell you they are not aware of these opportunities. They don't know what to do. They don't know where to go or where to turn to. So we can use some of our youth forums at the community levels to also educate the youth on these opportunities, the adult education programs, the lifelong youth learning programs can also be explored.
Before we let you go, the catchment area policy seems to have created some problems. What is your view? Should it be abolished? Should it be retained and refined? What can we do about it?
I think that it should not be abolished, but it should be properly implemented. I think the guidelines for implementation came out rather late, and so people were not too sure of what to do. So once those guidelines are out now, we can review them, strengthen them with the process that took place this year, and make sure that it is better implemented and made more foolproof next year.
We want to thank you very much for spending part of your evening with us.
Thank you, Kingsley. It's a pleasure.
Leslie Tete is the National Coordinator of the Ghana National Education Campaign Coalition, sharing some views on the committee as set up by the Ministry of Education. Behind the News, if you are somewhere in the two upper regions, you are on Radio Upper West and Ura Radio. And in the northern region, you are on Radio Savannah. Tax, what do you think about it? And also, there are other issues still pending. We'll be back. You are live on Radio Ghana and linking up with all our regional FM stations and across the world on www.gbcghana.com. And somewhere in Betoum, you are getting us on Sunrise FM. That is Kofodria and its environs. Some tests here before we move on to the next story. Sidi Sakara Y is saying, committee here, committee there, they all come to naught. And Nicholas Esiru Chenchenku, the CSSPS should be abolished due to its numerous problems. And Baba Musa UDS, the idea behind the CSSPS is good, but the implementation was done in a very hurried manner. Congrats to Didi Arau. I guess that is relating to his being named as the BBC Footballer of the Year. And this country is not doing well under this administration. Everything is in a mess. Zach from Northern Region says so. And Madina Tolon, NDC putting up a multi-million, I guess that is not the issue under consideration here. We'll try to look at the issues that we have for now. And to our next story, the GetFund board has issued an ultimatum to contractors working on GetFund projects in the Upper West region to complete them on schedule or face steep penalties. The board also expressed dissatisfaction with work on some of the completed projects, saying they failed to meet some specifications and criteria put forward by GetFund. This came out during a tour of the Upper West region by a 7-member team from Accra to inspect some GetFund projects. The team was taking round some projects, including classroom blocks, dormitories, administration blocks, among others, by the Deputy Upper West Regional Minister, Cesar Kali, who has joined us on the line presently to look at the team's visit. Good evening, sir, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, my brother Kingsley, and also good evening to our cherished listeners.
How many projects can you tell us about in your region with support from GetFund?
Oh, indeed. For now, I cannot tell you vividly offhand the number of projects that GetFund actually executed.
Can you hazard a guess
in the region
as to the number?
There are over 200 projects actually given to the whole region. At least every district has benefited from GetFund projects, no less than 20 projects, ranging from classroom blocks, dormitory blocks, and the others, and even including furniture.
Yeah. Even though you talk about this, the understanding is that the board members of the GetFund are not very happy with some of the projects being executed. What exactly is the problem?
Oh, well, I think, Kingsley, to be very sincere with you, the GetFund board led by Dr. Koba and the administrator, Dr. Samgaba, and some other members, Dr. Laji Pelga Seidu, Madame Leticia Ado, Madame Helena Kwe, and Mr. Peace George. In fact, these are the members who have actually visited the Upper West region to monitor and also evaluate all the projects that the GetFund board has actually given to the Upper West region in all the districts. And indeed, they have been here for the past 3 days. They are supposed to go to all the districts. And some selected or sampled projects have been chosen for them to actually visit to ascertain the level of performance of contractors, the performance of even the consultants, and also the quality of work being executed. And I was actually so much impressed to be in their company to actually lead them to the various communities. And indeed, my first excitement was that if you actually look at the level of enthusiasm, zeal, energy, and actual commitment that the team actually are going with their monitoring. It's so interesting because they ensure that at all places that we visited, they want to see the contractor. They want to see what the contractor is doing. And any time that they feel is not, you know, in the right direction, according to the specifications, we will comment on it. And in fact, at some point in time, they were very impressed because some of the contractors have really done very well by completing their projects even ahead of shutdown. And of course, some contractors too are behind shutdown. And in fact, this actually warranted them to send a very strong warning signal to all such defaulting and such contractors who are lagging behind to speed up with their projects, else have their contracts actually terminated. I was so much excited because it's actually provided the platform for us to raise some concerns in respect of requesting for more projects to some of our deprived communities who have not yet tested any GetFund projects. And I want to tell you that since the inception of this administration within this 3 year period, a number of GetFund projects, as I said, over 200 have been given to various communities within the district in the Upper West Region. And the boards were, as I said, were actually very excited at some point in time, and at some point in time, in some places too, they were not happy because the contractors were behind schedule. And that actually made the GetFund administrator, Dr. Sam Garba, to always, in fact, question the contractor, you know, scrutinize the contractor, why he has not been able to actually meet the time schedule. And because he always wanted to know, is it a question of payment or what was it? And in none of the cases, it wasn't at all the question of payment. We on our own, as implementers of the project, have met many of the contractors several times, giving them warning signals as to the completion dates that they are flouting. But I think with the coming of this GetFund board, we have seen that we really mean business. And I must use this opportunity to really commend the GetFund board members who have come here, because they have proved to me that indeed they are actually committed and they want to ensure that government resources do not go to the drain. Because at some point in time, I thought they were even always tired, but they would say, please, let's move on. We are here because we want to actually see what is on the ground. Seeing is believing. And that made me to actually admire, especially the ladies among the team.
Well, Mr. Sizakali, so the question comes directly for the shoddy projects. Are you prepared to take on the contractors or perhaps even institute some punitive measures against them?
Well, there was no question of shoddy projects that came up, actually. What came out strongly was the behind schedule. You know, some of the contractors were supposed to complete their projects within 9 months period and some within 18 months period. And of course, those who exceeded the time frame, exceeded the 18-month period and the 9-month period, those were the people that incurred the wrath of the board. But as to shoddy jobs, they were not much pronounced, because where the board actually complained was the fact that some of the furniture have already been affected by the weather. You know, they are warping, you know, here and there, because, of course, some of the boards used were not matured wood. But as to whether they saw a lot of shoddy jobs being done as we were traversing through the district, that one was not pronounced, as I have said already. But it is the time frame of completion of the jobs that were the main, you know, issue.
Okay. I want to thank you very much for this update, Mr. Sizakali.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That is the Deputy Upper West Regional Minister on the line. It's still behind the news, live from Accra. We move on to the next story. If there is one court decision that generated some controversy recently, it is the 42 Ghana million cedi awarded to NDC's stalwart Alfred Wayomi. He was paid this amount after winning a case for which he sued the state for abrogating a contract to rebuild the Kumasi.
Namely,
the president has called for a detailed report from the attorney general explaining the state's decision to pay a whopping 42 million Ghana cedis of judgment debt. So is this payment justified? If not, who might have erred in the payment? Joining us on the line is lawyer Kisi Ejabin to help us find some answers to the questions. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
It's been back and forth, but would you say the state erred in granting Alfred Wayomi the judgment debt?
You know, when your contact called me, I indicated to him that I wasn't going to go into the merits of the case. What I indicated to him is that it is not unusual for one party to a case to say that it really doesn't have a case and it throws in the towel.
Mm-hmm.
It's not unusual at all. It would depend on what actually operated in the minds of the lawyers of the state, I mean the Attorney General's Department, to throw in the towel the way they did. If indeed they did not have a case, then it was an honorable thing they did and to waste everybody's time. But if they did have a case and they still threw in the towel, then that would raise issues of concern.
Yeah.
But I'll refrain from going to the merits of the case.
So generally, we open it up in matters like this. Do you think perhaps even an out-of-court settlement could have helped both parties so that there won't be so much cost in the long run if need be to award cost?
Out-of-court settlement, it may come back to the same thing in effect. That is to say, in the main, if they are settling, then the party that is at fault is still going to pay in the main the main sum. Perhaps what may be...
some compensation.
So what I mean is, if you are settling out of court, it doesn't mean that you still don't pay up your just debt. You still pay, but perhaps what will be lacking here is the award of cost by the court, but it is really neither here nor there. Settling out of court doesn't take away the liability. It doesn't.
So for all that we are talking about, if, assuming that a state decided to still pursue it, you think it will just have prolonged issues without necessarily addressing the situation? Is that it?
If the case is to be, pursued by the state now, I wonder what they will be trying to achieve. Perhaps their best bet is to do something which is extrajudicial. But if the state throws in the towel at the trial stage and it says that, look, we don't have a case and we accept liability, I'm wondering upon what basis we can then come out to say that, they are appealing against such a decision unless they allege fraud, that they were defrauded by the other party into believing that they were liable for that sum of money.
Okay.
If they cannot allege fraud, or that the other party hoodwinked the court to obtain that judgment. If they can't allege fraud and prove fraud, I wonder upon what legal basis the state can come back and go on an appeal in respect of this particular issue. So once again, like I said, I'm refraining from going to the merits of the case.
We are also trying to keep away from that case, assuming that it's been called again, so that you won't be cited for contempt in that case. But
it won't arise as it stands now.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. But as it is now, you've told us that if for any party going to court, when you see it is a bad case, you can quickly throw in the towel or perhaps try to...
It's an honorable thing to do, not to waste everybody's time. To waste the court's time, waste the other party's time. In the final analysis, it doesn't achieve anything. It's as if you are fighting for fighting's sake. That is to say, you are drawn up in a contest just for the sake of the contest. You do the honorable thing by throwing the towel. That's why a lot of times, sometimes cases are settled out of court. It means that one party accepts that, look, they are at fault, but they don't want a long-drawn battle. It doesn't take anything away from that person's stance. But the point is that if you see that, look, this case is bad against you, the facts are stacked against you, the law is stacked against you, you're going nowhere with this case. You do the honorable thing and throw in the towel. But I'm sure our questions are being raised now because of the quantum of money involved. I'm sure if it was like 200 Ghana cedis involved, for instance, no.
Well, many people think others should pay the taxes, but others also believe that, assuming that everybody is contributing a little to help in the development of the state, certainly it will be a lighter burden. On some occasions, there's been the concern that taxes are not being used exactly for what they are collected for. What justification does it give for people who do not want to pay taxes? Well, we have joining us on the line a tax expert to look at the issues and see how best there can be justification for taxes that are paid and what, perhaps, should be in the mind of people when paying taxes. And Alina Chab is the tax expert. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Can anyone say that if the tax is not going to be used for the appropriate purposes, then it is not worth paying?
I wouldn't buy into that. It's a school of thought in the field of taxation, which looks at what we call the benefits principle. People will wish to pay taxes based on the benefits that they are making, they are going to get from paying the tax. And so if you are not going to get any benefit, they think they shouldn't pay. But the basic principle of taxation is to the effect that we have to pay tax because it's our responsibility. Because the government is there to provide for our needs. Government doesn't do business. So where do we expect government to make the money to be able to provide for our welfare? And that is what is the school of thought known as the social contract theory. That you have a social contract with the government. Pay your taxes and I'll use it to provide for your welfare. That is a social contract theory. And on that basis, I wouldn't think the benefits principle should hold sway here in this country because we have a lot of need and government has to be helped to be able to achieve that objective.
Yeah. In recent times, to help develop some sectors of the economy, you've heard advocates talking about the fact that there should be a tax waiver, tax holidays and all. Is it a justified reason for organizations not to pay tax just to help develop an industry?
Not really. Those calling for what we call the tax amnesty are not advocating that people should not pay taxes. The idea of tax amnesty to ensure that anybody who has an outstanding tax to pay to government is assisted to pay. And how do we do that? The tax law is such that when you are due to make payment at a particular time and you default, penalties and interest start accruing. Now this can build up to the point that you are now struggling and you are unable to pay the taxes. So the idea is, why can't we assist by waiving the interest and tax and penalties? Then the actual taxes can be paid. Because with the penalties and interest, there is constraint on their cash flow. So assisting them by waiving the penalties is a prerogative that is available to the Commissioner General on certain grounds in terms of poverty, and then on the part of the President through the Ministry of Finance on grounds of equity and fairness. So the advocacy is not about encouraging them not to pay, but rather assisting them in the form of waiving the taxes, the penalties and interest. Yeah. And talking about to foster growth and development, there are a lot of provisions in the tax law that provide, as it were, relief for businesses to be able to recover their cost of operation. And so that is why the tax education is very important. If businesses should know the incentives available for them under the tax law, I can assure you if they go for it and they get it, they will be in a good state to continue to expand their operation.
Yeah, so we cannot claim tax holiday for any organization based on the fact that they want to develop that sector. It is an organization that decides that this is what we want to do. Is that it?
What the organizations have to appreciate is that under the Constitution, Article 174, it is only Parliament that has power to impose taxes and duty. And it's only Parliament that can waive taxes and duty. So Parliament has passed the Internal Revenue Act 2000, Act 592, which in it has industry concessions under Section 11, depending on the activity in which you are engaged. If you are into farming, It depends on the type of farming. If you're into cattle rearing, you have 10 years tax holiday. If you're into tree crops, 10 years tax holiday. If you're into cash crop farming, 5 years tax holiday. If you're a venture capital fund company, you have 5 years. If you're a rural bank, you have a tax holiday. So it's sector by sector and activity by activity. And these are spelled out in the tax law. What we realize over the years is that certain institutions had power vested in them under the enactment to grant relief and exemption. An example was the legislative instrument under the Ghana Investment Promotion Center Act, which covered tourism. The whole idea was that if you grant incentives, it leads to what we call tax expenditure. That is, the income that we would have had, but for the holiday. So we are saying that to assist the Ghana Revenue Authority to appreciate where they are making losses, why can't we get them to be the sole body to administer, not to pass the laws. The laws will be passed by Parliament, but they are to monitor, to ensure that the tax holidays and incentives are granted for specific purposes. One, to grow the industry. Two, to create employment. Three, to distribute the resources evenly to all sectors of the economy. So if you are granted the incentive, the holiday, and it is not achieving its purpose, then of course it calls for review. And the review will not be only to abolish it, but maybe to suspend it, to look out for the loopholes and plug them and reinvent the incentive. So as it were, nothing has been taken. The Ghana Revenue Authority is being tasked with coming out with the modality for who should enjoy for what period and how they can be monitored, which is a welcome invention. I think the delay has been the fact that there was no transitional provision. For example, in the tourism industry, the hotel industry, this LI was abolished under the budget in 2011, so Act 814 abolished it. But before the GRA can come out with the modalities of who can benefit and the procedure, nothing is being done. So you find out that some hotel businesses have imported items for expanding their operations to improve tourism, but they are now in a fix. Am I to pay the duties to clear the goods now that the holiday is not there? And if I pay the duties, it increases my cost of production. So when I finish with the setup, it's going to go into my charges. And then we will have cries again that, oh, your hotel rates are too high. So the whole issue is a timing difference, transitional provisions, and that is what has to be streamlined in a very quick way.
Yeah. So what do you make recently of importers talking about the fact that at the ports they pay so much and they are calling for abrogation of some of the taxes imposed in recent times on them? Otherwise, they were just setting demands.
The issue is this, that I remember under the administration of Honorable Safumafo, there was this idea that if the goods are to be cleared and the taxpayer cannot produce a tax clearance certificate on the spot, then he pays 1% of the value of the goods so that he can clear. Now, this 1% is a payment on account of your tax liability. So it is not a loss to the businessman. If the businessman files accounts and taxes regularly, he can claim this credit. At the end of your business, you prepare your accounts, you get your profit, we determine the tax liability. We are going to reduce the tax liability by this advance payment of the tax. At the end of the day, if you have paid in so much at the port, other than what you are supposed to have paid, you are entitled to a refund. So you apply for the refund. That's what I was talking about, the timing difference.
Okay.
And if you don't want to pay the 1% at the port, then you keep your tax file clean, so that you can get a tax clearance certificate, submit it at the port that you pay your taxes, and then you can clear your goods without paying this percentage.
Mr. Ali Nachia, there are other issues, but we'll be exploring them later. But for now, I want to thank you so much for shedding a lot of light on these tax issues. That is a tax expert on the line, Ali Nachia. But Ernest Ochery is Christian Action Aid. They've been looking at taxes for some time and tax justice. is on the line. Good evening, sir. Hello, Ernest Ochery. I guess there is a little bit of a problem on the line of Ernest. But some tests here, this one says, government should do away with the CSSPS because it has caused more harm than good. Christopher is saying so. And Basit Boli, Barack Obama challenged us to build strong institutions, but we couldn't. Indeed, there are still some kangaroos in our judiciary who must be exposed. And Michael from Navrongo, students with aggregate 30 are getting schools, while others with 27 are not getting. And this one, paying tax is a patriotic duty. And all must, let me see, it's a patriotic duty of every Ghanaian. Andrew Manga from Boku is calling for that. And taxes are collected to develop the country, but the rate is always high. Lucas Wah says so. We have the indication that perhaps, NS Watchery, we are just running out of time. But you are talking about tax justice. Can you help us appreciate what it is?
Thank you, please. First of all, let me clarify that I'm NS and I work with Christian Aid.
Yeah.
Basically, when we talk of tax justice, what we are saying is we want a tax system which is fair, which is just, which is equitable, and which is proper. That is, people are paying on the basis of their ability, and everybody who is supposed to pay is paying. So basically, in our call for tax justice, that's the fundamental that we are calling for.
Yeah. Do you have a lot of complaints that people are paying much more than they should? Sometimes that is what people say.
Yeah, actually, we have had some reports of that nature. In a recent time, we carried out a research as part of our work, and that was around tax and the informal sector, where research has shown that people are not really paying the taxes that they are supposed to pay. But there were some evidence pointing to the fact that people are paying more than they are supposed to pay, especially around the local level taxes, because in the market sometimes you have people paying basic rate, you have paying tax terms and all that. But these are local level levies, not like taxes which have been passed by parliament. But of course, these are all forms of levies that are being collected, and there were evidence pointing to the fact that some people were paying more than they are supposed to pay. But that is really on a lighter note rather than a general situation.
Can something be done about it, really?
Yes. For us, what we have been asking is that, first of all, people should know exactly what they are supposed to pay. And that is one key challenge about the level of the issues around taxes, that people are not really aware and so are tempted to pay whatever that they are asked to pay. And that is really a big issue, a really, really big issue that needs to be tackled around the issues of taxes. That the level, because of due to the level of low level of awareness, people are sometimes tempted to pay more than they are supposed to pay, and that is really the issue around that.
Perhaps it will go back to what Mr. Ali Nacha said, but we'll be exploring this issue further some other time. I want to thank you so much for your time on Behind the News, Ernest Ochery. He is with Christian Aid. And Behind the News, just before we go, this one says, until corruption and party politics are out of our educational system, we'll never have smooth CSSPS and quality education. Combat, Sushi Waku sent in that one. That is where we wrap it all up for the week. Let me thank so much Ezekiel Edu, sat at the controls. Ibrahim Kwatin did our summaries. And our production team, Edmond Tete, Christopher Siedu, Bright Agama, John Pobi, and Ibrahim Asari. My name is Kingsley Odinchere.